44th episode of Medical Talks. Today, we're joined by David Riegelnik, founder and CEO of RealMatch, an interbank trading and settlement venue for digital assets and cryptocurrencies. David has had extensive experience and an extensive career, in traditional finance with over 15 years at Credit Suisse. David went on to found an algorithmic trading company and has been active professionally in the crypto and digital asset space since 2018 as a member of the executive board at Bitcoin Swiss, Europe's oldest and largest crypto broker, and as president of the Open VASP Association. David, great to have you at Medical Talks. Welcome.
James, glad to be with you here today.
Yeah. And congratulations on the launch of RealMatch. I definitely want to get into the details on that. Before we do that, though, I do want to start in, you know, the journey from TradFi into digital assets is always interesting. We'd love to get your background, a little bit of the journey before you founded RealMatch.
Yeah, indeed. And I think probably I would jump right in. I mean, yeah, you said it right. Indeed, quite a traditional background and career in the variety of risk and control and governance functions in banking. Seen different divisions, private banking, investment banking, and so forth. Always had a big heart for trading and technology around. I think it was quite natural to eventually then also detect the whole crypto space. And I think that's probably here in that context relevant. So I think it was probably, it's always a funny story around 2012, actually, when I discovered Bitcoin and right into it and then thought, oh, no, that's nothing, right? Nothing new, right? What are these kids going to tell me, basically, right? Yeah. And I think it was actually a bit of a year later, only 2013, it actually was through Ethereum when I learned that. And then somehow in combination with the whole programmable money thing, and then I really understood the idea of decentralized consensus, and I got hooked since then. Ever in the beginning as a hobby in spare time, and then later on, as you said, as part of my career.
It's a familiar journey. I think I could tell a similar story. So it'd be great to hear what is RealMatch, and you know, what problem are you trying to solve, and what was your conviction about starting this company?
Yeah, I think it's the whole founder team, all four of us, basically having pretty much the same journey as I just explained before. So really coming all from banking and trading and having a TradFi background. And then once in a while, got into crypto. And I think the team met indeed, as you said, as part of the executive management of Bitcoin Swiss. And I think when you come from that traditional background and you have all the understanding, so to speak, in all flavors about regulation and about why these controls exist, while the value chain is as it is when it comes to trading and clearing and settlement and the likes. And of course, many other topics such as capital requirements and AML and sanctions and all those topics, right? Then no doubt that you have a bit of a special perspective when you look at crypto. At the same time, really seeing that there's a very big disruption is coming. That was clear right from day one then, finally. And so I think when we started out the RealMatch, it was very clear that we want to build a trading venue, which is really here for regulated professionals or regulated institutions. And maybe also let me share here another experience we had. I mean, you said we were at Bitcoin Swiss, which is one of the pioneers. And that was a time, particularly in Switzerland, very early, already in 2017, 2018, right, as part of the first wave, when more and more banks became interested in actually offering cryptocurrencies for their clients, because simply the wealth management clients were demanding, you know, I want to have maybe 1-2% of my portfolio in Bitcoin.
This was going up.
Exactly. And so they stopped by, and there was almost no bank, actually even also even from the States and everywhere, they came to the crypto valley. Many of them visited Bitcoin Swiss. Actually back then, even the later SEC chair was once with us. Funny story. And basically they wanted to learn, and then actually some of them really started out to asking, okay, on an RFQ basis, could we maybe really white label services, could we get into it? And yeah, we quickly saw and learned, right, that it's actually not a lack of willingness to go into crypto for these banks, but actually it's quite hard to really include these type of services into the offering. And certainly one key driver has been just to make sure that we with RealMatch can offer a venue. I don't want to say exchange, right, deliberately, the trading venue, which really is ideal for regulated institutions. And as you know, there's a number of things behind that. So for example, never being a counterparty as ourselves, right? We operate as a market operator, so we are never ever counterparty. Because, I mean, let's be honest, these so-called crypto exchanges, they're well-known names. I mean, they're effectively a broker, right? You buy and sell from them. In the end, they might have an order book on the UI, but these are not exchanges. And I think that's one element, right? The lack of functional differentiation, segregation of power, duty. Then certainly also, of course, the certain lack of adherence when it comes to AML. And we also quickly, in the end, really understood that there is a real need for institutions to trade among themselves, right? And I think probably the final topic, which is really critical and certainly a key USP in what we are doing, is the lack of post-trade settlement in crypto space nowadays, because it has grown up from the retail space. Everything was pre-financed, and that really is inefficient. And we might talk about that maybe also later on, but I think you can really go into this. But I think the element of that you trade now and settle a bit later is still very, very efficient. And so I think, of course, you can do this with retail clients, but that's a key topic that in our case, since we only admit banks and securities firms, we basically can also enable a proper post-trade settlement, which is very efficient.
So I think it sounds like what you're saying, the rules is very much the appropriate name, right? Bringing some maturity and rules to the crypto market. I mean, is this still an existing problem even in 2023? Basically, the market lacks that sort of framework, those appropriate framework?
Completely. I think really starting really with, as I said before, with these so-called crypto exchanges, I mean, typically having all functions under one roof, right? Yeah, of course. I mean, this was really a very heavy fraud case.
Right.
I don't want to put all those in this camp, but still, I think other than, as we all know, in mature markets, right, you really have your trading, your clearing, your settlement, your custody, your staking, your leverage, everything under one roof, right? That would never fly if these tokens are securities, right? Typically, certainly not in a place such as Switzerland, for example, but very similarly in most parts of the world. And so I think we have still this anatomy that the market is dominated by these very early retail focused brokers that call themselves crypto exchanges. And I think this is one of the key barriers for institutions. If you really want to enter the market with serious business, you do care about counterparty risk. And I mean, let's be clear, also these so-called exchanges, their matching algorithms, their market surveillance, there hasn't rarely been ever been audited and fully tested. So there's a quite level of trust required. And yeah, last but not least, particularly when you think about the whole post-trading phase, the prevalent model of pre-financing is not really attractive for institutions at all.
You've mentioned a couple of interesting things there. I mean, trust is clearly an issue with centralized exchanges, and the ethos of crypto was always atomic settlement, no counterparty risk, peer-to-peer. So how specifically have you addressed those different trust mechanisms, controls in crypto trade?
Yeah. No, I mean, this is, of course, indeed, I mean, this is an interesting topic, right? I mean, the whole also possibilities that decentralized mechanisms such as decentralized exchanges and so offer, I mean, no doubt that there will be a continuous increase and in relevancy. At the same time, we believe for a very long time in a coexistence of centralized and decentralized models. But of course, as soon as you are an intermediary, which comes with centralized models, there is regulation. I think for a good reason, because it really protects the participants and investors down the road. I think in our case, and to your question as with respect to controls, I think it's really very important to really start with the principle of to really have a business model where indeed you are never a counterparty. So in our case, we really are only a market operator. So our participants, which are banks and securities firms, trade among themselves, right? It's never a rule match in the middle. That's very important, even though we facilitate not only trading, but also clearing and settlement in the sense of delivery versus payment. But we make very clear as part of the contractual framework, the fiduciary setups, how the assets are maintained and so forth. It's never on our balance sheet at all. So I think that's a starting point, right? There's a key control against the counterparty risk that rule match might be for these participants. The next thing, and this is also a very important topic, is the non-discretionary nature of what we do. I think it goes beyond just counterparty risk. It's also, in our case, we are strictly rule book bound, so to the point of rules. which really mean that exactly the same principles apply to all participants. That's also something which is not a given typically in crypto space, right? Yeah. And you know, this starts even with topics such as fees. You know, there's not a side deal here or something, right? You have even prices being in the rule book. But even more relevant when it comes to crucial topics such as, let's say, counterparty or participant default, you know, buy-in processes and so forth. How does this work? And all those things. Equal rights, equal treatment with respect to, particularly in the low latency sector, in the low latency field, right? To make sure really every counterparty and participant is treated the same. And of course, that we as Worldmatch would never interfere into the market, not as a market maker or whatever in any form. I think that is that the rigor, which is, or the lack of thereof in the market in general, which I think is still to 95% of all trading venues out there is not fulfilled in crypto space.
I mean, clearly it's a bottleneck for most, or let's say a problem for most, basically why the OTC market is still the first choice, I guess, because they're not too sure, you know, how to interact or what they're interacting with in exchange. So how do you address, given you're serving banks and you mentioned the HFT space, how are you addressing the issue of counterparty risk for them? I mean, the fairness level, the level playing field is clear, but how about the margining process, or what is the...
Yeah, exactly. So as I said before, we are indeed never a counterparty. So all funds are in a fiduciary setup. So it's maybe important to mention here on the fiat side, we work with the Luzern, the Cantonal Bank, Swiss Bank. So we basically open up a dedicated sub account for each of these participants with the bank. And of course, on the crypto side, we use the Metaco system for segregated wallets for each account. Which is a key topic here as well. So, and there obviously, of course, the certainty of the Swiss legislation, which is well rooted, also codified, right? It's the law that basically whenever you store crypto in segregated wallets, they are basically off balance sheet, right? They are protected from bankruptcy, which is absolutely super critical. So they belong to the customers, to the participants. So I think to start there, when you say about really, to make sure that there is equal treatment and controls. With respect to the whole topic of the trading side, obviously, I mean, we do use the NASDAQ matching engine, which for us was also very important to really go also there, not only for customers, but also for trading for the best of breed approach. And we are quite proud and happy that we were able to win NASDAQ as our provider. And we do on the matching engine there. I think also it gives participants really the certainty that how the whole matching algorithm works, right? How all the trade orders work, how all conditions work. There's an opening auction, an end of day auction, and so to speak, despite the fact we have a 24/7 trading. So you all have all these really proven processes, these proven systems with respect to fairness of the matching process. We have a classic central limit order book with a price time priority, nothing fancy there. But again, it really stands, it uses tools that have withstand the test of time. And I think this is another very important factor vis-a-vis our participants. Maybe I would like to add with respect to the HFT participants that you were mentioning, indeed, that of course, what is also very important is that Worldmatch is, despite the fact you're only admitting banks and securities firms as direct participants, of course, we are here for their clients. And Worldmatch we have made clear right from day one that we really built the platform to facilitate, of course, sponsored access and direct market access models so that banks can really, particularly for institutional hedge funds, funds and others, trading firms, to allow them to use the platform in a sponsored fashion. And this, of course, comes with a whole set of additional controls, such as individual risk limits for each of their clients, kill switches, and so forth, to really make this work.
It sounds like a new paradigm that you're really bringing to the space. I mean, can you touch a bit on, you know, you mentioned earlier on about rule book. What is the implication of having the rule book? And I mean, how does this... You see rule books, obviously, in the traditional exchange space. Has that been something that's been common in the digital asset space?
I think that there are only maybe a handful of others in the spot market, right? We talk here really crypto spot, obviously not the CME, which is a very established one. But I think on the crypto spot, I mean, there are maybe just two, three other competitors out there which really do the same. But it's, I think these are also relatively new. I mean, for sure, these are probably the venues 2.0. We believe there will be this massive disruption now. It's now on the way from this probably very retail-oriented one-stop shops at the beginning towards this more differentiated landscape. But I think the implications of really being rulebook bound, I mean, first and foremost, it's really you have to, it is a commitment, right? And a promise to your participants that they know exactly for each and every situation, how is basically, are we going to treat you in trading, during clearing, during settlement, even more important towards post-trade, I would say. It gives them also possibilities to basically really to call on you or to call in to check whether you really have fulfilled what you have promised them. It gives a high certainty. And in the end, of course, yeah, it is really a testament to the non-discretionary characteristics and in the end, the equal treatment. I think as long as it's not really promised and really written down and agreed what exactly the rules are of behavior in all situations, you never know exactly until it happens. And I think that is really the implication. And yes, it is a hassle, right? Being rulebook bound, all those who have done it before know exactly that the message works, because you cannot just quickly do something then all of a sudden in some freeform way, right? You have laid out exactly what the procedures are. You also promise to people that they, or your participants, that they would learn it once if you would change those procedures and the likes. And yeah, in the end, that's about certainty. That's about a risk mitigation.
Yeah, I mean, clearly there's a theme here of transparency and fairness, right? Which is dominating across what you're saying. I mean, you mentioned as well the you've got a very keen focus on the ultra low latency. That obviously seems to be something differentiated in this market. How does latency impact which markets and jurisdictions take center stage?
I mean, latency is always important, isn't it? I mean, there's no market where latency not plays an important role. And certainly, I mean, the crypto market specifically is very slow. I mean, it is completely dominated by retail players in the past. And given, I think, also the jurisdictional challenges and the regulatory challenges, I mean, we do know that some of these even well-known so-called exchanges operate in offshore places or even in unknown places, right? Of course, it typically boils down to certain places where AWS runs its large data centers, right, where they are. But so, in essence, the thing really is that in such an environment, of course, yes, latency seems to be not such big issue. But at the same time, this offers, as you can imagine, tremendous opportunities for those who really are willing to arbitrage. And I mean, this is already a big reality. But we are still in a point, it's still early in the game. So still prices are made on a global level. So imagine, I mean, that would never fly right in many other material markets where typically it makes a key difference on which continent you have your matching done. As of right now in crypto, typically you still have markets being made across the globe where 100, 200 milliseconds of travel package time from a network point of view, latency still are the norm. And so there is no doubt that this offers, of course, a fantastic opportunity. And in our case, yes, indeed, offering a venue for ultra latency and which really is a robust venue, at the same time compared with this regulatory first approach, was always one of the key pillars strategically. And together with the NASDAQ solution, I mean, we have execution times down to 30 microseconds, which is very fast, which is somewhat close to where also traditional markets are, stock exchanges and the likes. And this really is a C-level change, right, compared to existing crypto markets. And I think in our case, it is also relevant not only for those who really want to run these high frequency strategies, but it is foremost, right, we know how markets work, it is foremost important to also attract market makers and arbitrageurs, which in the end provides really the liquidity you need. And I mean, I can say that we have dedicated market makers which have a clear obligation. So we work with Flow Traders and Bankhaus Scheich in this case for the moment, more to come. But those are the two first dedicated ones. And I can say that, of course, they can offer enormously competitive prices on our venue, not least because they can really have the ability to harness the speed of our platform. And this in the end helps then all participants to find fantastic spreads. I mean, I can say that we had recently Ethereum quoted to down to 1 cent spread, which is enormous, right?
I mean, given this offering, are you able to now offer RuleMet in all jurisdictions? What was that?
We basically can admit banks and securities firms from countries that are host member of the OECD and the FATF. I think by doing so, we basically really have a level playing field. So this would mean most countries out of the European Union, UK, Switzerland, of course, Liechtenstein as an exception, and then Singapore. We do not onboard for the moment clients from the US. I would say unfortunately, but I think that is prudent. And but that's basically the scope where we can. I think by doing so, we really make sure that when it comes to AML rules, travel rule, payments, sanctions, adheres to sanctions, we basically adhere to all of them across the globe. Also, in countries we do not accept members. So, for example, in the US, I think that is really that ensures that the participants on our venue also feel comfortable trading with each other. Right, that's very crucial because in the end, you face them. You do not face RuleMet, you face your participants.
So you mentioned basically, you've got a central limit order book, you have a club, and you've got segregated client accounts, and you've got low latency algorithmic trading. But clearly the assets aren't moving with every transaction. So how does this all fit together?
Yeah. No, absolutely. For sure, I mean, the whole topic of post-trade settlement is about netting in the end, right? Absolutely. So if you trade heavily and regularly, we would typically find that conservatively, you maybe in the end have to settle maybe 20% of what you otherwise, if you would have to move it all the time, even more in certain cases. And this really is the efficiency. I think that's also an interesting challenge, which I think is sometimes overlooked. You know, new technologies, sometimes people go overboard, right? And say, okay, blockchain, we can now do it. Yeah, atomic settlement, right? Let's do it right away. But not all that is technically possible is really efficient. I mean, there is a reason why markets work as they are, right? I mean, you could have done atomic settlements even before, of course, not with the blockchain, but you could have used databases on that. But there's a reason why you typically net out at the end of the day or so, and then you settle basically. As we do, we have a T+1 settlement cycle, which really allows you then to, on a very efficient basis, to deliver in your either fiat or token leg at the next day. And yes, this of course it provides tremendous savings from a capital point of view. And when you think of capital requirements, particularly for banks and securities firms, even more down the road, when you think of also regulation in the pipeline when it comes to crypto assets, which are quite punitively charged with respect to capital requirements. So you have to be very careful there. So in this respect, we do believe absolutely that for quite a while, the idea of netting out and settle later, it really is the way to go. That does not mean that decentralized models and atomic swap models, maybe for certain niches and the likes, that it's fantastic. They will grow. There is a coexistence, but the bulk of trading will remain in a more efficient way. And I think there is also it's that trade-off, right? In the sense of you're going fully decentralized, fully smart contract based, but maybe less efficient, sorry to say. Or relying on intermediaries, doing netting, having custodians, right, and so forth. There is an element of trust in it, but even more relevant, there is quite a level of regulation. And that's, so regulation in combination with the trust element is efficient, right? I mean, it's like I'm saying to people, it would be great if I would grow my food completely, right? So I would exactly know what I eat all the time. But I want to do something else. So I go and buy my food. I need to have trust or the rules, the regulation out there that I can trust this. And so in the same sense, it's a bit of a silly debate, right? So that, of course, we need intermediaries and therefore we need regulation and rules because you want to harness that efficiency. That has not changed with blockchain. And I think it would be very naive to believe that indeed this type of atomic swaps would overnight become the norm. They will not for many, many, many years.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're very much of the same view that trusted intermediaries are here for a while and they do serve that efficiency. There's a value proposition in terms of efficiency and regulation and scalability in many ways. I mean, this notion of netting, I think is pretty interesting. So how do you see I mean, one of the things we're always very keen on is networking our sub-custodians, because we view the value proposition that the assets eventually will not really move that dramatically.
Absolutely.
It's almost a book entry movement or a netting movement between custodians. How do you see that evolving with Liquidity?
Yep, absolutely. And I think we also see the even the more bigger potential, to be very honest. I think we are, as of right now, we are already happy as part of Rule Match that they can really, together with solutions like Metaco, right? Which helps to facilitate DVP, that we can basically really allow to get guaranteed the participants delivery versus payment as part of that DOS segregated wallets, and really avoiding many of those transactions by doing so, by doing this post-trade settlement as part of it. But yes, I mean, how fantastic would it be if you could even harness it between different custodial solutions? And I'm aware that there are some ideas around to make this happen, and I do think so. This will be of key importance. We from our side would certainly embrace that development, and I think we might also maybe even play a role in it, potentially helping. But I think there will be many solutions, probably competing solutions out there. But absolutely, we believe the custodial solutions, custody systems, and have a great opportunity, potentially facilitating these type of cross-custodian netting. And this is a new, I mean, it's also interesting. I mean, when you look at established markets, mature markets, right, where basically you have a CCP and you have clearing house and the likes. I mean, of course, that's very heavily established. To some extent, also a bit monopolistic, right? You have typically one per continent almost. No, I'm a bit exaggerating, but it's a very small club. And I think that's maybe it's highly efficient. They do a fantastic job. They are really the epitome of modern markets. But at the same time, I think it's also not bad of a bit of a challenge. And I do believe that the tokenized value chain, to some extent, will also challenge these existing players, particularly if, let's say, new challenges really are regulatory first and play basically by the same rules, but maybe also explore a bit different ways. Think of it. I mean, in our case, where we basically sit a bit between, you know, in the middle of an OTC or a CCP, where typically which steps into both sides. So we are somewhat in the middle. Working really with very clear incentives, with clearing margins between participants, nevertheless facilitating multilateral netting, which is highly efficient. There's a bit of a tail risk you have to live with, right? So in our case, so potentially would have to fall back on bilateral if let's say the clearing margin would not be enough in a 99.9 VAR case. But still, so these are interesting in the middle propositions. And I believe this might also be some positive, healthy competition for the post-trading space. And I do believe that custody systems will play an important role in facilitating this type of new route.
Yeah, listen, 100% agree. I mean, I think you mentioned earlier as well that you know, you're still leveraging, let's say, the traditional fiat rails of a bank partner. How do you view basically, or how do you expect that will evolve with stablecoins? You know, obviously we have a number of, whether it's Tether or USDC or
ones.
There's a lot of talk about bank-issued coins or CBDCs. What's your view of how that'll evolve and be part of your, let's say, landscape?
That's such a vibrant and tremendous important segment, absolutely, and with so many facets again. So to start with, I think maybe start with the current fiat routes that we are using. So in our case, indeed, we use the very much traditional routes because we do have, for the moment, trading pairs which are listed against the US dollar.
Yep.
And obviously, also the traditional dollar rails are very important. And of course, we are very, very, very happy that we have found a very strong bank and that supports that. So at the same time, and we don't see this go away so quickly at all, right? There's also no reason why should we, right? I mean, there's also, to be very honest, that there's an interesting side topic. I'm not sure whether we have time, but I mean, there's often, particularly in the United States, there's sometimes a bit of a narrative of de-dollarization going on. I would say that's probably a bit more of an industry narrative sometimes from the crypto side to scare maybe regulators. I don't see this de-dollarization happening. So let me say, here we are, Rule Match, a venue in Switzerland, middle of Europe, right? What do? We of course, quote against the dollar, right? Because that's where liquidity is, as with most commodities. And I think we are proud to do so. And of course, we also do take the corresponding responsibilities for all that comes with it from a regulatory point to be very serious. So I think that's a bit of a contrasting point, what you sometimes hear, right? But nevertheless, I think so, fiat here to stay. I think particularly on the institutional side, Very, very important. I think we will be here for years. We do not see a quick go away from fiat. Why should we? Again, this brings us back to real world and to regulation and to efficiency. At the same time, of course, stablecoins provide tremendous potential, particularly, and I would say, from our point of view, we would mostly bet on bank-issued stablecoins, right? Such as those that we have seen, like, for example, the United States, pilots that, for example, J.P. Morgan is doing, or in Europe, Societe Generale with Forge. We have seen in Switzerland projects, some ideas, white papers from several banks. Or recently in Europe, another project where also our market maker Flow Trader is involved for a euro stablecoin. So we do believe bank-issued stablecoins might be very attractive because they're really within the existing rules, within the existing regulation. Also, when you talk about AML, travel rule, proper conduct. So within those rails, but really leverage the tokenization, leverage blockchain, but not throwing it overboard, still maintaining good old payment principles and regulation, I think is the way to go. And this will allow us, rule matching specifically, of course, to have a quicker settlement cycle. I give an example. For the moment, we have a 24/7 trading. We settle, as I said, T plus one the following day. But of course, still cutoff times when it comes to international payments still is an issue. And this means, for example, on the weekends, right, we do not settle. So we have a long settlement cycle only on Monday. If you would have those stable coins, we could, of course, start doing this daily. It would be excellent. And I think this will be an interesting segment for us also. And we believe it's maybe more the bank-issued stable coins than the CBDCs, to be honest. If you would bet on, I think that might be the key theme the next few years.
I guess, again, it's really regulated and transparency to those coins, and probably opens up a new FX trading business for you as well, basically, bigger picture.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Yes, for sure.
You know, we're running up on time, unfortunately, but, you know, looking forward, obviously, thematically, we're hearing a lot of, you know, given the background in TradFi, we see a lot of the TradFi names, be that Larry Fink or others, you know, evangelizing about tokenization. You know, we'd love to get your views on that and how, you know, does that fit in your roadmap for a rule match as well?
Absolutely. I mean, of course, there is also a multifaceted topic. I think first and foremost, there sometimes this is black or white view, right? Like blockchain is good, and tokenization, crypto not. Of course, we don't share this, right? We do believe that the crypto as a class is here to stay, no doubt. At the same time, yes, let's be honest, the real disruption will come with tokenization, no doubt. Financial instruments and so forth, they will be tokenized. It will take time, but they will. And I think what we are now building now, like Medaco, like us, like other players in the market, we are effectively building the rails, right, for tokenization to come. And so, yeah, it will take time. I think I will, everything else is naive. And also, you know, if you really want to replace some existing technology with new, you really need to show that you really make something better, cheaper, quicker, and so forth. It certainly needs to play in the same rules. That's important, right? Regulation, that you do not basically compare apple with oranges here, but you need to make something better. So this takes time. And in our view, of course, tokenization will be massive. And I think we have a bit of a saying, we do believe that those banks and securities firms that trade and are engaged in crypto right now, most likely are those who will be the first to actually also be active in token securities. And I don't talk about pilots. I talk about real world offering. I think participants that we know, they of course talk about, they have ideas about tokenization. As for rule match, you can imagine, I think, yeah, there is of course a perspective when we talk about non-discretionary, when you think about all these principles, all these systems we use, all the effort, you can expect we don't do it only for crypto, but it's not about the time to talk about that. As of right now, we focus now on that phase, but certainly we will be prepared.
Well, David, I think you reflect many things we've often said at Medaco. You know, you should always say, come for the crypto, come for the crypto and stay for the tokenization. And effectively, if you build for crypto, tokenization is a free option, right? Which everyone likes free options. We already talked about tokenization of let's say FX So we see the stablecoin is a great example of the tokenization's happening and starting to happen at scale, basically. So it's coming. It's great to see firms like yourself building for that future. So listen, I think it's been great to have you here, David. Really appreciate you taking the time. It's been a fantastic experience. I'm sure the listeners really appreciate the insights, and we're rooting for Real Match and its success in the years going forward. We love having partners like yourself, and thank you today.
Thank you, James. Was great.
Yep. So listen, everybody, thank you for joining today. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to check out the recording and transcript. They will be available as usual on our website, emetico.com. Thanks for joining. See you next time. Thanks, David.